Welcome to Gila Members Community Radio. Next up, we'll be back to the garden, conversations with Jean Eisenhower and her guests on all things green and growing in and around your house. This is GMCR, a voice and a choice for Southwest New Mexico.
Comes the springtime, plant your seeds, see what you can do to grow your needs. Tend your gardens, touch the earth, thank the stars above for all your worth. Seasons of plenty, seasons of change, also abundantly here.
Hello and welcome to Back to the Garden. I'm your host, Jean Eisenhower, and this is a show for gardeners, beginning gardeners, and all those who think it might be a good idea to have a garden. Today we'll be talking with Cheyenne Thomas, a local arborist and gardener who will be sharing his expertise on planting trees, building soil, and pruning trees. We're happy to have you here, Cheyenne.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, I've noticed that some local stores are beginning to carry trees for planting, I was assuming as the weather cools. What can you offer us on the proper timing and procedure for planting trees?
Well, if it's a bare root tree that you order from a nursery somewhere, it has to be during the dead of winter, whenever they arrive, December, January, February. But if it comes in a pot, you can plant it anytime you want.
I hadn't really realized that.
And the main thing I find is that people plant trees, bushes, they plant everything too deep. Out of their generosity of their heart, they dig a big hole and they throw in condiments and it settles and they build a berm around it. And pretty soon, your tree or bush is planted 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 inches too deep, especially a few years later when everything settles out.
And the problem with that is?
Well, tree bark likes to stay warm and sunny. It doesn't like to be wet. Fungus grows on it. Borers get into it easily. And orchardists in America have this cute little saying that works in English. I guess it doesn't work in other languages, but they say, show a little root, get better fruit. And what that means is it's better to have the upper root surfaces showing a little bit and getting sun than it is to have the trunk being wet and dark.
And that matches what we see when we walk through a forest. We see
right.
The roots spreading out on the ground around the
right.
tree.
I call that the hip swell, where it gets wide down there. And in books, they tend to call it the root crown. For some reason,
mm-hmm.
that looks like a crown to them.
Sort of
or
a crown
an upside-down crown. Or
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway, that's what it's called. So in arbor work, a lot of times, you go to look at trees, and the first thing you do is you look down at the ground and many, many times it needs what's called a root crown excavation, where you just dig until you find the swell of the tree and expose it to the sunlight and then rebuild the soil or put a well around it so that it will always stay in the sunshine. Because people add compost and mulch and pretty soon the tree is buried.
And so you could even put something like little walls around to keep that from coming down.
Right. In commercial developments, you'll see tall walls, sometimes 2-foot stone walls built around trees because they know from their code that they cannot push dirt up around trees. It ends up, 4 or 5 years later, you go through a wet spell and fungus takes the trees out and they go, oh my, what happened?
All right. And what do you put in that hole along with the tree?
Just the native soil. Because if you put in organic matter, that disappears, leaves voids, and things sink. So
right.
time and time again, when you get your tree or your plant, you look exactly how many inches you have from the bottom of the pot or the longest root to the hip swell, and that might be 5, 6, 7, 8 inches, but don't dig the hole any deeper than that.
And don't put anything else in that'll settle.
Right.
All right. Now, how do we build our New Mexico soil?
Well, people are always trying to tell me it's bad New Mexico dirt. It's hard New Mexico dirt. Well, most of the soil in Grant County is silt, and guess what? That's the medium-sized particle. And that's one of its basic characteristics is that it compacts really well. And I find that almost everybody has a poor understanding of what makes up soil, specifically knowing accurate definitions to four words: clay, silt, sand, and loam.
Mm-hmm.
And all these things you can observe if you take a jar of water two-thirds full and put your soil in there and shake it up and look at it. And the sand and the silt will settle immediately, and the clay will take anywhere from an hour to a day to settle.
Mm-hmm.
The sand, you can see the particles. So what you can see as particles is sand. The silt is a little too small to see with your eyes.
And so it just looks solid?
Looks solid. It may have different layers and different colors, and then the clay will settle out eventually, an mm-hmm. hour or a day. And it's almost always lighter and a very thin layer. Grant County is almost totally made up of silt, mm-hmm. variations on silt. There might be a silty loam, might be a real fine silt. A lot of the farms here have full-spectrum silt. Well, let's go back and define our terms here. Soil is only made up of rock particles, basic soil. Before we get to fertility or organic matter or anything, it's just made up of rock particles. And to talk about them, we call them small, medium, and large,
mm-hmm.
and they're quite simply clay, silt, and sand. And most people have never heard really what silt means or exactly what it is, and it's the medium-sized particle, and it's the most common one in the world. I mean, any agricultural area in the world has a whole lot of silt with something else mixed in, maybe sand, maybe clay.
Mm-hmm.
Sandy loam that farmers are always wishing they had or they do have is a lot of silt and a lot of sand mixed together. A lot of times it's half and half.
And would you define loam before we go further?
Oh, yeah. Loam is basically agricultural soil. It's good for plants and good for humans. And what makes it up is you have a mix of soil particles of the sand, silt, and clay so that you end up with moderate porosity or moderate texture. And that means that everything that you want to move through it will move through it, like water, air, roots, worms, tools, will move through it at a good pace, but if it was all sand, right, it'd be too loose,
mm-hmm.
and that wouldn't work. So moderate texture, moderate porosity gives you good garden soil, and that's what loam is.
And is loam mixed with the organic material?
It can be. A lot of people think loam means fertility, that it's rich soil, but
right.
It's not. It can be. I mean, you could have rich clay or rich silt or rich sand, but loam is just the texture, the porosity of it, and then hopefully you add organic matter to it, and you get fertile loam.
Okay. All right.
So you go to your jar, and you shake up your jar, and you can look at it again, and mm-hmm. and you can see what you have.
I read recently a description of these, the differences between these sizes. They said if a grain of sand was equivalent to a human, then silt would be the size of a basketball, and clay would be the size of a marble. Have you ever heard that?
No, it's fascinating.
Okay, where do we go from here?
I guess I already said that most of the soil in Grant County is variations of silt with mm-hmm. some sand-sized particles and maybe a little clay in some areas or a whole lot of sand in some areas. So basically, I say that Grant County has wonderful soil, especially every time somebody tries to tell me is all I have is bad, hard New Mexico dirt. Well, guess what? Silt, by its very nature, compacts really well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're able to dig it up, you can turn it right into garden soil,
mm-hmm.
especially if it needs some sand, you add some sand to it.
And since it's all based on rocks, that's full of minerals.
Especially based on granite and the minerals that we have here. In other places, we buy decomposed granite.
Right, and we've got
and
a
that's
lot
what all
of
the
it.
Soil is here, basically. Is.
And others have to ship it in. That's good to know.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so what do we do with our our wonderful New Mexico soil?
Well, I could even take somebody's driveway in most cases and turn it into a garden. I would put 2 inches of sand on it, wet it down 3 or 4 times, 5 or 6 times, and then dig it up somehow mm-hmm. by hand or with a tiller or with a tractor.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll stay loose, and it'll work great.
You can add all your organics to it, then.
Right. And here's something that is really counterintuitive to most of us, and people tell me here in Silver City, well, if you add sand to the soil here, you get adobe. And guess what? You go all up and down the Rio Grande Valley, all the agricultural soil is sandy loam. Mm-hmm. And you go to all the 80 places that make adobe up and down the Rio Grande Valley, and they make their adobe out of sandy loam.
Mm-hmm.
It seems a little counterintuitive, but that the same soil makes good gardens and farms as makes adobe. I mean, that's counterintuitive.
Uh-huh.
I mean, people think, oh, adobe has to be really hard. But if it has too much clay and too much fine silt in it, it'll be too dense and crack and fall apart.
Right.
So to make adobe here in Grant County, the guys go get a pile of silt and add the right amount of sand to it so that they have sandy loam. So the next time somebody tells you, well, you just get adobe if you add sand to this Silver City silt, say, right.
Right. But now we have to amend the soil. Where do we begin with amending it?
Whatever your compost is, wherever you mm-hmm. get your compost from, composted manure, or when you buy it in a bag or whatever, it just has to be.
Or make it from your kitchen scraps.
Right. Well, most people's kitchens
don't produce that much.
That much.
But don't most gardeners know they need a compost pile?
Yeah, but you usually have to import stuff and not just stuff from your kitchen.
Right. Well, you're right. I have been having a lot more success now that I have chickens, and I get to take all their straw and manure and put it in my compost. I've suddenly got 10 times as much.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so we just add our nutrients and our organic to our soil, and we're set to go.
And hopefully you have fertile loam of some sort. It might be silty loam, meaning it's dominated by silt,
mm-hmm.
or sandy loam, meaning
mm-hmm.
it's dominated by sand.
Can you give any quick tests for, I guess people just put it in the jar, and what are the percentages usually?
Well, ideal sandy loam, it's amazing. They always give the same formula. They say 40% sand, 40% silt, and 20% clay.
Okay.
But I don't ever see much soil with clay in it around here. Fine silt will behave kind of like clay. It'll crack, and it'll get slippery, and your road might be a mess. But that's usually just the fines in the
mm-hmm.
silt. It's usually not clay.
Really? Okay.
There's really not that much clay around here. Clay is a product of rainfall,
mm-hmm.
and we've never had a tremendous amount of rainfall here in millions of years, I don't think.
Hmm.
So you don't find too many clay deposits.
Do you want to talk about nitrogen, potassium, potash? Do you use amendments when you work on people's
compost
gardens?
And then some form of phosphorus. Phosphorus is the root and fruit and flower element.
Mm-hmm.
Nitrogen you need to add every year because it just disappears into the soil, disappears into the thin air. Phosphorus you need to add for a couple of years, and then you have to start testing, or maybe even start testing to begin with, because phosphorus stays in the soil. It doesn't wash out, and it builds up and becomes kind of toxic. It limits other things from happening.
And that's phosphorus, you said.
That's phosphorus. And, you know, people always love to add it because the bone meal comes in a bag or the rock phosphate, and it says for fruit, flower, and roots. And so, the more I add, the better.
Right.
And it's not true.
Okay, I didn't realize it could become toxic. There's a good warning.
Right, it binds up other things.
So phosphorus, we need to maybe do our tests. Do you do soil tests?
Yeah, the little soil test that comes from the hardware store works just fine if you follow the instructions.
And so you see that you're okay on phosphorus, and you just leave it alone. You don't buy that. Okay, so there's no just random throwing amendments on your garden.
Right. Well, you could add all the nitrogen you want, probably, and you'd be okay.
Yeah, I did that soil test, and I was okay on phosphorus, but I was really deficient on nitrogen. So we definitely added that and really helped. Okay, well, let's take a little break. We're talking with Cheyenne Thomas, an arborist and gardener. We'll be talking a little bit more, probably about building soil, but when we get back, we're going to talk about pruning trees. So let's take a little break. We'll come back with our calendar, too. Welcome back to the Garden, and I've got a few calendar items here. First, we are so fortunate to have 4 different farmers markets in the area where gardeners can usually get plant starts. The Silver City Farmers Market takes place every Saturday from 8:30 to noon, that's until October, downtown next to the San Vicente Creek off Bullard between 7th and 8th Streets. The Gila Farmers Market takes place Tuesday and Saturday, 3 to 6 p.m. It's on the main road in front of the old grocery store. And for those out on the far west of our listening area, Mule Creek Farmers Market takes place every Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And the Members Valley Farmers Market is open Thursdays from 3:30 to 5:30 at the San Lorenzo Senior Center. That's it for the farmers markets, and we also have the High Desert Organic Gardeners Meetings, that's High Dog for short, which are held on the last Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Volunteer Center's Commons Room at 13th Street and Bennett. And also coming up real soon is the Members Valley Harvest Festival, the 8th annual. There'll be not only the farmers market that day, but arts and crafts fair, delicious locally prepared food, greenhouse tours and workshops, a giant raffle, live music, a free health fair, Members Valley stories and poetry, and activities for the kids. All this is happening on Saturday, October 5th at the San Lorenzo School on New Mexico Highway 35 from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. So we are here now with Cheyenne Thomas, local gardener and arborist, and we've covered planting our trees for the fall and building our New Mexico soil. And we're going to finish out the hour talking about pruning trees. Now, I've got, I think, about 5 fruit trees, which I put in 7 years ago, and I've really just found it so hard to whack at those beautiful leaves. I actually read a book about pruning, or skimmed it enough to feel confident, and I pruned a few trees 20-some years ago, but it's been a long time, and it's just hard to take sharp blades at those beautiful branches that you've seen growing all summer long. And I've heard other people say exactly the same things, that they just don't want to prune their plants. So, let's get over this. Tell us why it's good for us to good for the trees for us to prune them.
Well, with fruit trees especially, we've been growing these trees for thousands of years, and we've picked out the most vigorous ones, and we want them to grow really vigorously so that we have a lot of choices about how to prune them and what shape they're going to be. So it's our responsibility, having encouraged this vigorous growth, to also be vigorous pruners. It's our job to go in. It's kind of like a haircut, so to speak, that's necessary training. Mm-hmm. And especially fruit trees are supposed to be pruned every year of their life, especially the first 4 or 5 years.
Oh, so I missed that window.
And they end up looking kind of dorky. You know, you go, oh, that was a pretty tree till you pruned it.
Uh-huh. But there's so much green there, I think it's okay. But I think I got 20 almonds off my almond tree this year. Yeah, so that's probably maybe lack of pruning. Or maybe it was the fact that it was planted too low or something.
Well, one thing you want to do is, and different fruit trees are different, you kind of need a book to see the different shapes that fruit trees naturally grow. But you want to make a nice, well-spaced solar framework is what you're doing. And if it's really crowded and dense, it's not well-spaced, you know. You want something that's kind of like a three-dimensional candelabra with well-spaced branches. And you're cutting the tips back each year to make shorter, stockier branches so that they'll support the fruit and things will be well-spaced.
So shorter, stocky branches is one of the goals, as well as getting light into all the branches. Okay.
So things like peaches are traditionally pruned into a big bowl shape. You want so much sun that the middle is cut out completely. You have a big satellite dish shape.
Oh, really? Okay.
And apples don't need quite as much sun, so generally they have what's called a modified central leader, which is kind of like a little staircase in the middle of the tree that gradually goes up, but each year you cut it back, so because fruit trees just shoot straight for the sky is what they do, and one of our jobs is to keep them down within reach of humans,
right, so we can pick the fruit
so we can get up in there and deal with the tree, whether it's prune it or spray it or whatever
thin
the fruit. So if you see what kind of framework you're trying to create for a tree and what to do each year, it's training. A lot of times chaos is the only person that's been taking care of a tree in a yard in Silver City.
but we'll call that letting nature take its course, and we think that's a good thing. Yeah. Well, maybe not for trees that have been
bred. Kind of like if you had a dog and you never corrected it, how would it behave?
Right. And I have a an apricot near my fence, and I've got some of the tree branches growing into that fence, and I know that we should get those away because there can get infections in the bark if it's rubbed wrong.
Yeah, and it's probably having light block too.
Mm-hmm. And so which branches, you know, if you're looking at your tree and you know it's got too many branches, there are there certain rules for knowing which branch gets cut and which one gets left?
Mostly it's spacing and whether they're going in an ideal direction, because trees, I don't know if the image of an Etch-a-Sketch makes any sense to people, but you can draw and lines in and erase lines and make things go where you want them to go, because you just want this framework of kind of, like I said, a three-dimensional candelabra with mm-hmm. lots of space, and eventually you want to be able to climb up in there, so there has to be room for a human to get up in there. And I always look for a place to put the left foot and then the right foot and the left foot and the right foot. And
oh, okay. Interesting. Are there any mistakes that people typically make when they prune?
Yeah. Usually people leave stubs, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's a half inch long or an inch long or 6 inches long. It's like kind of having a splinter in your arm that you never remove because it won't ever heal. Trees do not have the ability to go out and go around the stub.
Mm-hmm.
So you cut pretty close to the main trunk.
So wherever you have two coming out, you cut one of them pretty close to the,
right.
the neighbor. You don't leave the stub.
And you don't look at the trunk when you're making your cut and make a cut flush with the trunk. You look at the branch that you're going to cut, and you cut it straight across. Even if it doesn't end up flush looking to the trunk, what you're trying to do is make as small a wound as possible on the tree.
Mm-hmm.
So it's straight across that little branch, wherever it falls.
Straight across, not on an angle.
You can put a little angle,
on
there. The goal is to keep the wound small because trees have real limited ability to heal, and you just want them, and they won't jump out. So you cut it pretty close, and it'll skate right across and close right up.
Now, I put in a cherry tree that the basic shape of it is a Y.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody told me that that's problematic.
I'm glad you brought that up. That is the main juvenile flaw that you look for in all trees. It's called twin leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is twin leaders that are very close together. For some reason, trees were built that they won't knit together in a narrow little crotch like that very strong. If you walk through a forest after a storm, that's where you'll always see the damage. When they had two twin trunks that were right next to each other, that always breaks off. That's
mm-hmm.
So you look for wider crotches. You could have two branches if they had a really wide, wide crotch.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, the building blocks on trees will be strong in a wide crotch. So,
well, I'm thinking maybe mine isn't a problem then, because it is a wide crotch. But this person had said that one of those, that the weight of these two would then pull each other apart and split the tree down the middle. I was wondering if I needed to cut half the crown off.
It still could be a problem. We would need to look at it. You can usually see, is there a long slit? I mean, does that...
No. Well, I'll look at it more closely. If there's a long slit, what would you say?
Well, then you probably do need to do corrective surgery and cut one stem off.
Okay.
The way fruit trees are usually pruned is one central stem and then have a branch come off, and a few inches later have another branch come off, and a few inches more another mm-hmm. branch come off, and another one. It's kind of like a spiral staircase in a way.
Right. I'm envisioning this. And what's the best time of year to do this work?
For heavy pruning, it's best to do in the winter because it's kind of a shock to a tree, and when it's dormant, it's best.
So the cold of winter, meaning January?
February is the best month, but everybody wants to have their trees pruned on the last week of February, and we can't do them all that week. So
uh-huh.
any time during the winter, later the better. I mean, because if we get a warm spell, things could pop out.
Mm-hmm.
Rodell did a book years ago, Rodell Organic Gardening, and mm-hmm. they had somebody write a chapter about all the benefits and the handicaps of pruning in the spring, summer, fall, and winter. So
mm-hmm.
at the end of the book, they said that it's best to prune when your mind and your saw is sharp.
when your mind and your saw are sharp.
But major pruning is done in the winter when the tree's asleep. And then orchardists will often do a lot of structural pruning, small structural pruning in the summer, if they have time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons in orchards the pruning is done in the winter, is because that's when the orchardist has time. He's not fertilizing, harvesting, mowing, tilling, all that stuff.
Okay. And would you say just a little bit more about pruning the tips? You said that the tips should be pruned back?
Yeah. On a vigorously growing tree, you cut back the outer third.
Mm-hmm. The outer third?
Yeah. Get busy.
Oh, that's pretty serious. Wow. Well, we've been talking with Cheyenne Thomas, a local gardener and arborist. If anybody would like to consult with him a little bit more, his number is 534-3999. And our time is up now. We hope you've learned at least a few bits of information that'll be useful in your gardens. Thank you, Cheyenne, for being with us here.
Thank you for having me.
And sharing with this community. Thanks. Thanks to Kyle Johnson for handling the production, to Greg Renfro for the intro and outro music excerpted from his original Seasons of Plenty. Thank you, gardeners everywhere, for keeping these essential skills alive for all of us and for sharing these skills with others. Please tune in next week for another interview. This one coming up will be with Osher Gelbart, whose expertise includes water harvesting into tanks and building things like cold frames out of those tanks for winter gardening. In coming weeks, we'll be talking with other local gardeners about native species, gardening with children, planting garlic, beekeeping, and many other subjects we hope will spark new visions for your garden. So please check back in. Until next week, I'm wishing you peaceful, healing moments in your garden. I'm Jean Eisenhower, thanking you for listening to Back to the Garden.
Tend your gardens, touch the earth. Thank the stars above for all your worth. Seasons of plenty, seasons of change, also abundantly here.
This is Gila Members Community Radio. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Back to the Garden with Jean Eisenhower. Join us again next Thursday at 4:30 for more conversation on all things green and growing. This is what community radio looks like. This is GMCR.